Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what do you think that the punishment should be if you shoot someone, you murder them basically, you mutilate, then rape their lifeless body, engage in some casual cannibalism? What do you think the punishment for this should be? Like, I think that it should be at least life imprisonment. And in this case, I'll be like, all right. It's very hard to argue against the death penalty here. Okay, well, how angry would you be? How indignant would you be with 2 years of nothing? 2 years in a cushy French detention center and then sent back home to freedom. Well, that's exactly the quote-unquote punishment that Issei Sagawa received. Hi, I'm Teddy and welcome to A Briefcase. Today, we're covering the Japanese cannibal killer Issei Sagawa. Issei Sagawa was a terrible piece of shit person in his lifetime. And he, in all the unfairness of life, grew up really privileged. And okay, you know what? I'm being a bit dismissive. So we need to start on April 26, 1949. Now, Issei was born in Kobe to a rich family. Issei's dad was a businessman who was at one point the president of Kurita Water Industries, which is a listed company. Alright, so he was a businessman. And his granddad was the editor of the Asahi Shimbun, one of the 4 largest newspapers in Japan. So he is from shmoney. But I'm going to say that he had kind of a rough infanthood, and the thing is that I am very much not qualified to comment on whether or not this had an impact on his mental health, but he was born premature. But the thing is, I do know other people who were born premature and ended up perfectly normal. But Issei, he was so premature, he was so small that he could literally fit on the palm of his dad's hand. So that's very scary for a parent. So he popped up premature, he immediately got sick, he got a small intestine disease, and even though he recovered, he lived his life as a very delicate, very sickly kid. He wasn't into sports or dance or anything physical like that. Now what he really was into literature. Now, Issei is a little bit of an attention whore. So, in a 2011 Vice interview, he actually admitted that he started getting all sorts of dirty thoughts when he was really tiny. Like, when he was in the first grade, so that's like primary one, he already started to have cannibalistic thoughts. That's kind of weird, alright? He had cannibalistic urges and I didn't have it as a kid, but like, all right, maybe he's just curious. But this is where it gets really twisted. They don't specify, but when he was very young, he raped a dog, according to him. So there wasn't much else about that. And somehow he makes it through to Wako University for his bachelor's. And this is where the first incident happened. Now, Wako University is in Tokyo. It's a very cosmopolitan city. Lots of people visiting, lots of exchange students. And we don't know if this is premeditated, but one day he follows a German woman home. And he was like, yeah, I have a thing for women who are like the opposite of me. Now, Issei is short, like really short, like 144 cm. So that's like 4'9". And there is nothing wrong with a nice, confident, short king, but that he was not. He was sickly, he thought he was weak and ugly and small, he had no self-confidence, and He said that he wantedto eat a woman who was the opposite of him to get their energy, to absorb their energy. So you see, he's small and short and ugly, and he wants to eat somebody tall and beautiful and confident. Okay, so he follows this tall German woman home, and while she's sleeping, he breaks into her apartment, which is horrifying. One of my biggest fears is like home invasions, which don't really happen a lot in Singapore, but it's still there, you know?So his plan, he was like, all right, I'm going to slice off her butt and then I'm going to sneak away. Which, isn't it a bit of a stupid plan? Because how do you sneak away after literally butchering someone's ass? I would wake up and be like, ah, you got my ass kicked. I'm gonna call the police. Okay, so before he can even like really get her butt off, she wakes up and she pushes his weak ass to the ground and she calls the police.And he gets charged with attempted rape because the police is like, oh yes, very typical, this looks like he's trying to rape her, right? And he was like, okay, yes, I was definitely trying to rape her, not trying to eat her butt or anything, I'm not a cannibal. So he doesn't say anything about that. And then in the tradition of rich men and their sons across the world over,His dad pays a settlement to his first German victim. And this first incident happens when he's about 24. And it doesn't have any sort of lasting impact on him. He doesn't go to jail. He doesn't have a rap sheet. Because after that, he still goes to Kwansei Gakuin University for his master's. And he majors in English literature.About 3 years after the first incident, he moves to Paris and he attends the Sorbonne, which is considered to be one of the world's top institutions for studying humanities, like humanities subjects. And it's a bougie accredited school, and obviously he has money to pay for his living expenses in Paris. And this is in 1977, and I believe he was doing his...PhD, right? And I really assume that daddy's giving him a very generous allowance, because allegedly he admits that he brought home a prostitute every night. And I know nothing about sex work, but I assume prostitutes are like kind of expensive, right? And that isn't the worst part. I mean, if everything is consensual, sex work is workAlright, there's nothing wrong with it. It only gets really gross when there's exploitation and trafficking and everything comes in, but I digress. So every night he brings home a prostitute. And every night he just tries to shoot the poor sex worker who's trying to do their job. And so where does he get this gun from? He has a 22 caliber rifle that he bought allegedly for protection when he first arrived.But thank God he doesn't. So he didn't get the opportunity to become a serial killer. Instead, he says when he tries to do it, his fingers froze up and he couldn't pull the trigger. So I don't know why, but it's like 4 years in and he's still a student at the Sorbonne. He's about 32, and in school, in class, he notices a beautiful, talented, kind Dutch woman, Renee Hartveld.We know that Renee is beautiful. We know that she's smart. Come on, she's attending the Sorbonne. And she was 25, so quite a bit younger than him. She was 178, so 5'10", so that's quite a lot taller than him. And you know, the Dutch are very tall people. She spoke 3 languages, and she was getting her PhD in French literature. Alright, not even in her first language. And he was obsessed. He says he fell in love with her almost immediately. This was love at first sight. And so he doesn't really know how to hit on her. He's never really had any sort of real dating experience or relationship. So he's like, oh, teach me German. My daddy is very rich and can pay. And the thing is, when you're a student, you do what you can. And in the grand scheme of things...Tutoring is like a reasonably respectable job. So they strike up a more normal friendship as she's teaching him German. But in his head, he just couldn't get over the obsession of potentially eating her. He's like, wonder what she tastes like. Anyway, so one night he invites her over. Nothing to test, this is just a tutoring session. And he's like, oh, Renee, my friend, my German tutor, can you read this poem for me? This German expressionist poem, which she does, and then she reads it. And then she leaves. And the creepy thing is, after she leaves, he leans over on the chair that she was just sitting on, and he licks the chair. And he's like, I will eat her. And this was not like a Epicurean thing, okay? This wasn't like, oh, I wonder what human meat tastes like. This was like a power and ownership thing. He thought that if he ate her, he would basically own her forever, you know? And so he calls her again. He's like, Renee, babe, come over. I want you to read the poem out loud and I'll record it so that I can practice my German poetry, you know, and we can have dinner together. And she agrees because he's a student, right? And they have a reasonably normal friendship in her eyes. And that was the night of 11th June 1982. That day he prepared his gun and Renee arrived. They sit on the floor, which isn't too unusual because he's Japanese, and they drink tea. And he spiked her tea with just a little bit of whiskey. And they talk, and Issei tells Renee that he's in love with her, that he wants to take her to bed. And she's like, no thanks, you're engaging, but you know, you're just not my type, friends, okay? And so she does this really politely and really carefully, and I think that if you're a girl, all girls know how to be careful with this kind of thing, because you never know what happens when you turn down the wrong person. Which really shouldn't be a thing, but it is. And so he's like, alright. And he gets his poetry, which was the point of their meeting anyway. And he's like, sit here, sit on this chair. And he hands her the poem and he starts a tape recorder. And while she was reading the poem, he comes up behind her.
Boss is here!
Military parents never miss a beat, and neither does the Johns Hopkins U.S. Family Health Plan. Built for every warrior in your family, with more than 40 years of service to military families, TRICARE Prime benefits plus exclusive extras. Learn more at warriorsathome.com.
With his gun, and shoots her in the neck. And for some reason, he tries to talk to her, but she obviously doesn't reply because she's dead. And there is so much blood, and he tries to clean it up, but there's just too much blood, so he gives up. And finally, he had her. He had exactly what he wanted. Now that she couldn't say no, he strips her down. He cuts her breast, her nose, and in the same 2011 interview with Vice, he talks about how he really couldn't decide what to eat first. So he tries to bite her bum. For some reason, he had a little obsession with her bum, with bums. But he's weak as tea for 2 weeks, so he leaves to get a butcher knife. He also has an electric carving knife. So he cut her up, he cooked her, he ate her, he listened to the recording of the poem, and he used her underwear to wipe his mouth after eating. He fried, he baked, he ate the face, the tongue, the eyes, the breasts, the butt, the feet, the thighs, the neck. He allegedly swallowed her clitoris whole, and then he tried to eat her anus, and he took some photographs while he ate. And whatever he didn't eat, he brought back to his bed to sleep with him. And the body took some time to decompose, but when the flies started coming, he decided, alright, it's time to get rid of everything else. He got a hatchet, which is a little bit like a small axe, and he chopped her into pieces, and then he shoved her into 2 suitcases. By the time he put everything into the suitcases, it's midnight, day 2. And the next day, which is should be around day 3, he calls a cab to the Bois de Boulogne, and this is a large park near the 16th arrondissement in Paris, and it's a bougie-ish area, right? It's near a park. And he wants to dump the suitcases in a lake, But there's people watching him. I don't know why he thought he could just go to a random park and dump suitcases in the lake in the middle of the day. So he gets scared and he drops the suitcases and he runs. And a couple at the park, they're like, this is really sus. So they go closer to the suitcases and oh shit, there is literally blood on the suitcases. There is blood coming out of the suitcases. And there is a hand. There is a literal human hand peeking out of the suitcase. So they call the police. Issei, he runs home. He continues eating pieces of Renee. And the police, they manage to track him down. So they come with a search warrant. And they open the fridge and they find pieces of Renee inside. They're horrified. And the thing is that Issei, he knows what he did. He confesses to what he did. And he's arrested. Now, this is what happened in French court. The judge who listened to him talk about his crimes, who listened to him, his confession, he's so disgusted. He's so shocked. He's like, oh my God, this man is not in his right mind. And he sent to an asylum indefinitely. So he had multiple psychiatrists who spoke to him, and three of the main psychiatrists who spoke to him, they were like, we don't think that he will ever be cured, all right? And now, don't forget, we cannot forget that Issei Sagawa is a rich boy. Issei Sagawa has money. So his daddy arranges for him to be transferred from this tragic French asylum to the Matsuzawa Hospital in Japan. And apparently, during this process, the superintendent was like, no, he is sane. He should be going to prison. What's he doing in an asylum? But they arranged for the transfer anyway. But also, because the French documents were sealed, right? Because of the sensitivity of this case, the French documents are sealed. The French documents were not transferred over to the Japanese police. And the Japanese police, to them, officially, there was no paper trail of all the filthy things that he did, even though it was reported on extensively. And so he legally couldn't be detained. And so he stayed in Matsuzawa Hospital for about 15 months. And then literally, he just walks out like nothing happened. He's a free man. He even got a passport. So, what did Issei do after this? He wrote 4 novels. He did the infamous interview with Vice about his murder and cannibalism. He was even featured on a Japanese culinary magazine, which is so ridiculous. What were they thinking? And he is such a creep. He appeared in a porn movie, like Pornhub Porn, but probably not Pornhub. Like JAV, and the actress, she didn't know who he was, and when she found out afterwards, she was like disgusted. And this is really very exploitative, unethical. The producers are disgusting. Now, both his parents died in 2005, but he didn't attend their funeral because apparently he was prevented from attending his funeral. Now, as a known murderer and cannibal, it was pretty tough finding a job. Oh no. And he even had benefits like welfare for some time. And in 2013, he had a cerebral infarction, which is kind of like a stroke, a hemorrhage, but kind of not. I'm not too sure. But it damaged his nervous system and he needed help, like everyday kind of help, in his Kawasaki apartment. And finally, on 24th November 2022, at the age of 73, Issei dies from pneumonia in a Tokyo hospital. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of A Briefcase Podcast. I think that the interview with Vice was one of the first Vice documentaries I've watched. Since then, I've watched a ton of Vice documentaries. They're just so good. I also particularly enjoy like their worst rated series. They're like the guy who goes to all the bad rated, lowest Yelp reviewed places. It's kind of funny. But anyway, I'm a bit like, I can't believe he just essentially got away with it on a technicality, and it's a bit grossed out. And like, I can't imagine telling someone that their kid, their sister's daughter's mother is free on a technicality, Well, it's almost Christmas, so we should all stay safe out there. It is also Michelle's birthday month, so very happy to Michelle. If I'm not wrong, at the time of recording, maybe tomorrow, she'll be flying off to go on holiday in America. So stay safe there. It's one of the countries with the highest number of active serial killers still around. And I hope everyone is staying safe and having a good time these holidays. As always, you remember that you can drop me a DM or tag me at A Briefcase Podcast on Instagram. I always look forward to that. And as always, you can find me online at abriefcasepodcast.com. And do join us next week for another brief case.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.